Because I already signed the action. I let it go. And then finally left right. But scale went to 10.
Good morning on this beautiful sunny morning. Two in a row. It's wonderful, isn't it?
It's summer.
We only had 2 days of clear weather between March, middle of March, and day before yesterday. That's a record.
Summer didn't start till the 21st.
Well, I expect a little more sun in spring. But thank you for reminding me about the rules and regulations. Carla, are you enjoying the sun?
I am.
Good. Let's get started. Today is Wednesday, June 23rd, 2010. It's 9:30 a.m., and the Portland City Council will come to order. Can you please call the roll?
Fish, Saltzman.
Here.
Leonard, Fritz.
Here.
Adams.
Here. Quorum is present. We will proceed. Can you please read the title, Communications, item number 918?
Request of Joe Walsh to address council regarding Americans with Disabilities Act.
Good morning, Mr. Walsh.
Good morning.
Good morning, Mayor and members of the City Council. I've given you a written presentation because last night there was an email from Commissioner Fritz, and I only read it this morning. And I'm going to give you some benefit of the doubt, so I'm not going to read my statement. It's in the record. You can look at it. However, there are a couple of things that I would like to say. Commissioner Fritz, when I read your email, I thought, well, maybe they're doing something. So I asked my wife to read it, because she's pretty apolitical. And she sees the world different than I do. And she came up with three words that I thought actually describes what's going on in this issue. And she said it was bureaucracy's paper reality. If it's on paper, it must be happening. Well, it's on paper, but it's not happening. All I'm really asking you to do is to take three chairs, move them out of the way for wheelchairs. Or maybe you have to do four, you can do the measurements. It takes about 5 minutes. Second, you could have a caller, when she calls a roll, just make an announcement. Hey, if you have a disability, we have special places up front for you. That's it. You don't need a lot of meetings, a lot of people with titles to come up with a plan. We could do that in 2 minutes. But my wife's description of what's going on in this issue is true. Paper reality is not reality in this world. It's just something on a piece of bark. That's what it is. So since I'm not going to read my presentation, there is something that I would like to bring up. And I sent an email to Commissioner Fritz on this, and you can see it on Indy Media, something that happened to us last Thursday. There were a group of kids sitting in front of the Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals in the place where they're supposed to sit, about 8 feet away from the federal building. Two officers on horseback approached them and hassled them. We went up and we said to the police officers, do you know that they are sitting in the safe zone? They are not bothering anybody. Why are you hassling them? Could I have your police business cards, which they're supposed to do? They refused. They hassled the kids. They're going to call it. They were reaching out. If that's reaching out, gentlemen and lady, we're in serious trouble. This police department should not be allowed to enforce the ordinance because they are not capable of doing it, and they're going to pick and choose what they're going to do.
Thank you for your testimony. If you could talk to Amy Stevens right here more about that incident. Did you say it was on the block of the federal building?
Yeah, the Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals sits on 6th Avenue.
So we should probably clarify, they have, I believe that on that block, it's under federal jurisdiction, and so we need to clarify what the rules of engagement are on their sidewalk, which I think is different. Thanks for your testimony.
You're welcome.
We're now considering the consent agenda. Is there someone from TriMet here to talk about item 926? Are you here for a different matter, aren't you, Rob? Yeah. You're here? Okay, so we're going to take it off the consent, see if we can get answers to some of the questions, and then if not, then we'll send it back to my office. So unless there's objection, well, 926 is pulled. Anyone wish to pull any other items? 940 is referred back to Commissioner Fish's office. And I understand Commissioner Saltzman is 949 referred back to your office?
Yes.
Okay. Any other items on the consent agenda that anyone wishes to pull off? Hi, good morning. Carla, can you please call the vote on the remaining consent agenda items?
Saltzman?
Aye.
Leonard?
Aye.
Fritz?
Aye.
Adams?
Aye. Consent agenda is approved. We have a 9:30 time certain, which is an emergency ordinance. Carla, can you please read item 919?
Adopt budget adjustment recommendations for the fiscal year 2009-10 over expenditure process and make adjustments in various funds.
Good morning, Mr. Scott. How are you?
Fine. How are you?
Good. What are we looking at here?
Okay. Good morning. I'm Andrew Scott. This is the fiscal year 9-10 over expenditure ordinance. There are two things to note in here, and most of the rest of the changes are technical in nature in terms of bureaus moving funds around within major object categories. The two things to note, there's $2,000, $2,040 going for last Thursday, and I think that will finish up the cost that the city has for this fiscal year that's coming out of this year's contingency. And then the second thing is a transfer of $800,000 into the police bureau's budget. That is designed to prevent any possible overexpenditure. At this point, the police bureau projects that they will not be overspent this year, and OMF has reviewed their projections, and we think they are reasonable. However, given the size of the police bureau's budget and the thin margin on which they are projecting to come in under budget, we're recommending transferring $800,000 into their budget to cover that. This is really just to prevent, if a bureau overexpends its appropriation, it's a violation of local budget law. So again, this is more of a safety measure to ensure that we don't violate any local budget law. However, at this point, the police bureau is expecting to come in under budget. I will also note that the current budget after the spring bump that the police bureau has is the budget that the bureau will be responsible to manage to, and so they will not be allowed to spend any of these $800,000. To the extent they do, we would be looking for additional cuts next year to pay it back.
So, Andrew, on that point, have you personally observed structural changes within the oversight in the police bureau of their budgeting process that give you some assurance that we won't see a repeat this upcoming fiscal year of what we experienced the current fiscal year?
I can say that we have been working very closely with the Bureau's Fiscal Division, and in consultation with the Mayor's Office, we're going to be starting monthly meetings starting this next fiscal year with the Chief and the Fiscal Division and the Financial Planning Division, and of course we meet with them far more frequently than that to go over projections.
And is that new?
That will meetings? Be more frequently than we have met in the past.
Okay. And specifically to look at where they are on different line item categories and their expenditures.
Correct.
Great. Thank you.
Where is this $800,000 being transferred from?
So the $800,000, earlier in the year, council set aside for next year's budget funds. There were a few different sources, but a big portion of it was some of the utility license franchise settlements that the city received. So these are funds that are set aside for next year's budget. They're assumed and budgeted next year. However, they are part of this year's contingency. So that's why we are budgeting them now. And that's why I stress to the extent that police spends any of this funding in this fiscal year, we will need to get it back from them next year to make next year's budget whole. So essentially, these funds are already being appropriated in next year's budget. We are just essentially moving them forward at this point, and we'll need to get those back. But again, we don't.
What's that leave our contingency fund at starting the new year?
Well, this doesn't actually change. The contingency fund at the beginning of next year is about $700,000. I don't remember the exact number. But again, this won't change that amount. And to the extent police spends any of this, we will be taking additional cuts from their budget next year to make up that difference.
So let me, as I understand it, it's kind of an odd recommendation. But to avoid, it's a cash flow issue. Once we adopt this ordinance, budgets, bureaus either stay within law and make their budget, but there's no further tweaking allowed, is my understanding of how this works. And the Bureau believes that they'll come in on budget. You're going to work with them to make sure they come in on budget. If they don't, then we've cash flowed any overages, so we stay within budget law. If they do go over, then the Bureau will be cut to repay this sort of short-term loan. Their budget will be cut next year to refill this. I sort of view this as, I don't know if this is accurate, but the money is coming from sort of the operating cash flow. You probably wouldn't describe it this way, but the operating sort of cash flow of the city, is any of that accurate?
I think it gets at the heart of what we're doing. What we're really trying to do is avoid an overexpenditure of the appropriation, since that does violate local budget law and would show up as part of the financial audit. The Police Bureau doesn't think they're going to need any of this money, and if we had perfect, foresight in the next 2 weeks, we may not need any of this, and that is certainly our hope. But we, from a financial planning standpoint, want to make sure that, and just to, $800,000, I think, is about 0.9% of the overall Police Bureau's budget. So it is a very thin margin. And there are a lot of things, if we get an unforeseen number of retirements, those can cost, significant amount. I mean, other things could happen in the last 2 weeks. And that's why we want to be prepared in case that happens. And as the mayor said, if we don't do anything now, this is the last opportunity to amend budgets for the current fiscal year.
Go ahead.
I have a bunch of questions. What was our contingency to start this year?
We started this year at $2.1 million.
So we started this one at $2.1 and now we're starting this next one at $700,000. Mm-hmm. I want to go through the packet because there were some line items I didn't understand.
Okay.
The grants fund in transportation, $10 million. What's that?
It's a recognition of state funds related to purchasing the streetcar.
Okay, thank you. And development services on page 2 of 23. There's a contingency of $7.7 million. Is that the same as reserve? How did we get to have a contingency of 7.7 in development services?
So there's no adjustment.
On page 3, actually, the top of page 3.
I think that's their current 2009-10 contingency. I could follow up with additional information. I don't have the details behind that right now. Well,
Commissioner, I had a question about the development services budget on page 3 of 23. It talks about, it says it's a contingency of nearly $8 million. What is the contingency fund? How does it get there, and what is it used for?
This is in what page are you on?
3 of 23 of the over expenditure budget process.
In exhibit number 2.
23 on item. I wish I had Paul Scarlett here. I can tell you that it's not extra money laying around. They continue to operate near zero on their reserve fund. So.
I can find out later. Thank you. That was the answer to my question, actually.
Yeah, it's not extra money.
Right. And thank you for your continued work on that.
Thank you.
In the general fund reserve, we had $63 million. This is on page 4. we had $63 million, and then it said we used $49 million of contingency in expenses. What all did we use that for?
Well, and that means $49 million is in contingency. So that's not,
it's left.
That's not being spent.
So we spent $15 million out of contingency, out of the general fund reserve.
Out of the general reserve fund, yeah.
Okay. And if I could get a list of what we spent that on, that would be helpful. On page 5, the campaign finance fund, it lists $748,000 for external materials and services, and I was wondering what that was spent on since only one candidate qualified. Seems high.
And again, that's the budget. What you're seeing there is the 9-10 revised budget. It's not not actuals. So that's what is budgeted for the current fiscal year for the campaign finance fund. But I suspect their actual spending is lower.
So we may actually have more money in that fund.
Yes.
At the end. That's nice to hear. Okay, under the, let's see, the revenues in the grants fund on page 6, fund 217, we've got, oh, that's the streetcar stuff again, right? The $10.4 million.
Yes.
Right.
That's the adjustment.
On page, and I apologize for not bringing this up ahead of time. I was out of town over the weekend, so I didn't have time to look at it. On page 11, fund 317, the government bond redemption fund, we had $120,000 in revenue. Where does that come from?
Claudio Campuzano with Financial Planning. That's cash transfer revenue from the Housing Investment Fund. That's out of their beginning fund balance. It's to pay for an arbitrage penalty.
Okay, thank you. Page 14, under the Water Fund, there's a new capital expend of around $1 million. Do you know what that's for?
That's a shift of $1 million from contingency to the capital program due to the expected delivery of fleet vehicles. That's $700,000 of that. So again, you know, I think they're getting their vehicles in this current year, whereas they might have expected to get them next year. So they're moving that money out of contingency to pay that bill. And then contract change orders on the Sandy River Crossing project of $300,000.
So have those come through council already? Or are we approving that use of contingency in this vote?
No, the fleet purchases would have come as a separate ordinance, and the Sandy River Crossing project, I'm assuming, as well.
So
it came as a separate.
Yeah, this is just the financial transfer to pay for those things.
Thank you very much. Page 20 in Fund 702, the city fleet operating budget, there's a $460,000 less of an adjustment, but then it seems like it's added in the revised budget rather than subtracted. No, it's not. Never mind. Never mind, we can skip that one. That's what you get for doing things at midnight, or what I get for doing things at midnight. And then so we're still going to be figuring out funding for last Thursday in the upcoming budget. This just settles the debts for this year.
That's right. We transferred $11,520 in the spring bump, an additional $2,040 now. Well, I don't believe there's anything budgeted in 10-11.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. Any other discussion from council? Anyone wish to testify on this matter?
No one signed up.
Carla, would you please call the vote?
Saltzman?
Aye.
Leonard?
Aye.
Fritz?
Thank you very much for knowing all the details, even though I didn't ask you ahead of time. Aye.
Adams?
Aye. 919 is approved. We have a few minutes before our time certain. Can you please read the title for emergency agenda item 955?
Authorize an agreement for development with Siltronic Corporation regarding contingent commitments for development and restoration on the Siltronic property.
So, yeah, hi. How are you doing, Ms. Edmonds?
Excuse me, very well.
Enjoying the sun?
Yes, thanks so much.
What are we looking at here?
Last week you heard testimony on an ordinance related to this development agreement with Siltronic. And since the release of the development agreement, and even as late as this morning, we've had some, identified some needed amendments. They are outlined in the packet that includes a salmon-colored sheet and some yellow sheets of paper. And what we would like for you to do, most of these are just typographical errors. What we'd like you to do is move to accept the substitute exhibit that's on yellow paper with the addition of the amendment that's on the salmon-colored piece of paper.
So move.
Is there a second? It's been moved and seconded. Carla, can you please call the vote on the motion to substitute?
Saltzman?
Aye.
Leonard?
Aye.
Fritz?
I haven't seen the substitute, and I really don't like voting on things that I haven't seen. So, no.
Adams?
Aye. Substitute is the basis of a further discussion. Sally? You want to explain what the changes are?
Yes, yes. So if you would please turn to the memo that is on yellow paper. You will see a list of the changes. They are outlined. So on page 2, there was the word directive is replaced with the word recital.
So why don't we just pause for a second and let us read it.
Okay.
Unless there is there anything that is substantive here that we should air out for the listening audience? Any of these items you would consider anything other than Scribner's or technical changes? Doesn't?
I don't think so.
I don't see anything that.
Could you explain why you've made some of these changes? Like, what's the significance of recital versus directive?
The reference in the document was to a recital and was not to a directive.
Okay. And then why the change from negotiated to considered regarding the cost of the eco-roof?
That's a change that was requested by the Portland Development Commission. They believe that this language more directly relates to the action that they would be taking.
So it requires that when there is a tenant, potential tenant for the site, it's required that the eco roof be part of what is either negotiated or considered, but it isn't intended to be, nor do I think it's any substantive change.
I believe that's correct.
So then the next one in about the default goes with the amendment on the orange paper, right? Regarding the agreement cannot be terminated unilaterally after conveyance of the conservation easement?
No, I'd like to look to the city attorney to Catherine.
Why was the change on the yellow sheet made that if the Siltronic or the city is in default of any obligation under this agreement beyond the cure period, the non-defaulting party?
Go and have a seat, Catherine.
Did this language come from Jan?
So the city attorney asked us to make a number of these legal changes. So
right. Yes, both my colleague Jan Betts and I worked on this agreement. This language comes from Jan, and I believe it's intended to
what it means is that if I recall correctly, this phrase the city attorney felt was more binding in the agreement than the other language, which says that Siltronic cannot unilaterally walk away from this agreement and continue to expect or enjoy the benefits that we seek to convey to them as part of this agreement.
That's right. If they continue to be in default beyond the period for cure, the city would have the right to terminate the agreement. Doesn't mean the city has to, but the city has that right, and it levels the playing field in terms of the party's obligations.
And if I recall correctly, Jan just thought that her phrase was better than the struck out phrase.
Correct.
Right. It was clearer.
And then what's the significance of adding the piece about the conveyance, after conveyance of the conservation easement on the orange paper?
That's what I just said. That's what I just explained. Fits. Yeah. It means that simply because the conservation easement is conveyed to the city does not give it, the agreement still lives. The binding parts of the agreement still live. It isn't like you give us the conveyance of the easement and we're done. It's that you do that, but it also you have to live up to the other expectations in the agreement as well.
And what are some of those expectations?
It's all that hasn't changed in terms of unless if it isn't on this yellow sheet, wordsmithing, or it isn't on this orange sheet, everything is exactly as it was before the city council last time.
Correct. Okay, thank you.
I mean, I think it's fair to say that the changes that are outlined on the yellow sheet are, for the most part, very minor changes, with exception, and even the wording changes that you've identified, Commissioner Fritz, are relatively minor in nature and are designed to provide clarity and equality of obligations and opportunities under the agreement.
Any other discussion?
Yeah, I guess I just wanted to make sure I understand the additional language on the eco roof. So as the way I'm reading this, the incremental cost of the eco roof, which would be subject to possible PDC assistance or whoever, that incremental cost will be offset by the energy savings associated with an eco roof. Am I reading that right?
That is...
that delta in cost will be minus the energy savings.
Correct. That is what's up for negotiation. Because we don't know the size of the building, the use of the building, because we don't know, because there isn't a prospective tenant to build a building for, we wanted to put in some language that required this to be considered and make the legislative intent clear that we want an eco roof on it, but at the same time, allow flexibility of future negotiations to figure out how to do that, to not put ourselves completely on the hook for all the possible costs associated with the eco roof, but also not take ourselves completely off the hook for potentially doing what would be one of the city's first and largest industrial eco roofs. So that's kind of the balancing act we're trying to play with the eco roof. Any other discussion from council? Is there anyone that wishes to testify on item, whatever item we're working, 955? All right, Carla, would you please call the vote?
Saltzman?
So we're voting,
excuse me.
This is the final package?
Correct.
We need to substitute the exhibit that's on yellow paper with the addition of the salmon colored. We need to substitute that, and then we also need to amend.
We did that already.
Oh, you did?
We did that.
Okay. And then the other thing we need to do is amend the ordinance as noted on the salmon-colored piece of paper.
And we did that.
We did that
okay.
as well.
Great.
Thanks for checking, though.
Sorry.
Carla.
Okay.
Saltzman.
Well, I missed last week's hearing, and I apologize, but I know this is there's been some controversy about the wisdom of doing this agreement outside of the river plan. I think that this agreement, though, provides for effective connectivity between the West Hills and the river and for wildlife. And I think that we will be also providing additional enhancements for people accessing our greenway. And I think this also provides the potential to provide an excellent parcel of land for industrial jobs in Portland, either through Celtronic or through who they may choose to lease the property to. I think we have had a long partnership with Celtronic. I think they've come to these negotiations in good faith, and I accept all the concerns that have been expressed by Audubon and others, but nevertheless, I feel the situation Given our economic situation at hand right now, we should go ahead and approve this agreement, and that this will withstand the test of time and hopefully have an eco roof that will be unparalleled in terms of its breadth and scope and use for on an industrial property. So I'm pleased to vote aye.
Leonard.
Aye.
Fritz.
Well, first, I appreciate the mayor's personal involvement in negotiating this agreement. I mean, you worked really hard on it, and thank you very much for that. I want to explain to everybody the thinking that came behind my vote here. The property provides wildlife habitat and connectivity in part because up to this point in time, Siltronic has chosen not to develop the site. And we want our river properties developed and put into good jobs. The benefits of the agreement include that the development agreement establishes a minimum width for a conservation easement, and the city receives a permanent conservation easement. The city and Siltronic gain certainty, and the area is protected in perpetuity. The environmental review of a sea zone or conservation zone is much less likely to fully mitigate for impacts, and I think this was perhaps the single most compelling point to me, that under the river plan, this proposed zoning had only a very small amount of environmental protection zoning. And my experience with environmental conservation zoning is that we would not get as much protection as with this conservation easement. The city can initiate some enhancement activities now. Grassland habitat grows quickly and can be easily restored if disturbed by future development actions on the Siltronic site. And the area would be secured for potential restoration of the confluence area, perhaps providing off-channel habitat for juvenile salmonids during flood events. On the other hand, the risks are that we don't know if or when development will occur on the Siltronic site, what form that development will take. The conservation easement is, in my opinion, too narrow to serve as a functional wildlife corridor for large mammals if development on the Siltronic site is maximized. The land use activities on the Northern Pacific Railway property could negatively impact city enhancement activities in the conservation easement. Restoration work on the confluence of Doan Creek and the Willamette River require negotiations with and support by the Northern Pacific Railway, and we recognize that as another challenge that needs to be faced. Daylighting Doan Creek is constrained by the size of the conservation easement and is cost prohibitive in the short term, if not in the long term. Lots of money. And it's also constrained by the underground utility corridor and associated homeland security issues. Passage of this ordinance puts pressure on the council to acquire, preserve, or enhance the one or two remaining sites with connectivity to forest sites in Forest Park. And the conservation easement will be further compromised if a trail goes through the property. The cost associated, the estimate for the cost of restoration of Doan Creek is over $71 million, and obviously we don't have a funding strategy for that yet. And I am concerned that some of the negotiations were conducted without board public input. However, I particularly thank the Bureau of Planning and Environmental Services staff, as well as Bob Salinger and the Audubon Society, and the many neighbors who provided comments on this proposal over the many months that the mayor has been working on it. And I also thank Patty Howard and Tom Bizzo and my staff. Very good arguments have been made for not moving forward. However, with the adoption of the ordinance, the city would receive a conservation easement in perpetuity that, despite the many hurdles, and they are many, provides some opportunity for enhancement of the proposed conservation easement and potential restoration. My vote should not be interpreted as an endorsement or denouncement of the North Reach Plan. This is something that has been working in parallel since I came on the council. These negotiations came about due to Siltronic's unique history with the city and does not, in my estimation, represent a precedent for the North Reach Plan. As a city and as an elected official, I have the ability to consider the long-term benefits and shared responsibilities of my decisions, and I don't make them lightly. A vote against adopting this development agreement means no change for the present and a future. And with that, an unknown outcome when development does arrive, especially in the light of what I know about habitat protection in environmental conservation zones. Unless the whole site were given an environmental protection zone, there is a lot of leeway given to the developer under either method of moving forward. Adoption of the development agreement brings with it the certainty of land that can be restored, albeit not to the extent that many in the city would like to see. The conservation easement can be looked at as a doorway into better possibilities for the future. I have concluded after careful consideration that the long-term benefits, potential long-term benefits, outweigh the current short-term concerns. Aye.
Adams.
Well, I think these protracted negotiations or discussions that have been going on for how long? 2 years, actively, and informal discussions date back to the middle of the Katz administration. I know that. So I'm pleased to be part of the City Council that draws to a close these long, protracted negotiations. The reason that we are moving forward with this separate from the North Reach plan is because those discussions are many years in the making. And my hope for this this stretch of the river is that we have the kind of creative, successful economic and environmental site that this agreement allows for. And so continue to work on seeing it to fruition. This is a tough, tough site. It's one of the most polluted sites on the river. It was when before Siltronic agreed to locate there back in the 80s. 70s, 80s, and the fact that we're able to move forward with this amount of benefit, it's worth the effort. So I'm pleased to vote. I want to thank Amy Ruiz and Sally Edmonds and the entire team that worked on this. Aye. All right. Gets us to Time Certain. Can you please read the title for Time Certain Resolution, item number 920?
Adopt the recommendations in the Division Streetscape and Street Reconstruction Project Report.
So I'm pleased to bring forward this reconstruction report as part of the Division Streetscape effort. If Council adopts this, we will engage in the activities aimed at implementing and improving the Division Streetscape and Street Reconstruction Concept Plan. This is a plan that I think represents some of the best work out of a partnership between the city, businesses in the area, and residents. So I'm pleased to offer this for Council consideration.
Great. Well, thank you. Good morning, Mayor, Commissioners. My name is Elizabeth Mahan, Project Manager with the Bureau of Transportation, and with me here is Jody Yates, also from PBOT. And again, as Mayor Adams mentioned, we're here today with a resolution to adopt the Division Streetscape and Street Reconstruction Report and Conceptual Design. And so while this report represents over a year's worth of work on the part of project staff and advisory committee members, it also reflects over 10 years of work and effort on the part of community members who have worked tirelessly to see their neighborhood's Main Street become a healthier, safer, and more vibrant place in the community. And so it's really exciting for us to be here this morning presenting this conceptual design and ready to move forward with the plan this summer. But before we present the recommendations for the traffic and streetscape improvements, I wanted to briefly discuss the project background and our community outreach process over the last year. And so our project area is from Southeast 10th to 39th Avenue, and that encompasses the right-of-way within that area. This project stems from the Division Green Street Main Street Plan, which was adopted by City Council in February of 2006. The plan was a collaborative effort between the city and the community to improve the livability of Division Street between Southeast 11th and 60th Avenues over the next 20 years. And this effort was led by the Bureau of Planning with support from PBOT. The plan outlined a number of objectives for transportation improvements along the corridor and identified possible strategies for creating a pedestrian-friendly, economically vibrant, and environmentally sustainable Main Street. The plan also identified a number of existing conditions on the street that interfered with the community's vision for this Main Street. This included existing traffic volumes and speeds, inadequate crossing opportunities, for pedestrians, the lack of a cohesive identity and sense of place throughout the corridor, and the presence of pro-time lanes on Division. So pro-time lanes are these curbside parking lanes that become travel lanes during the peak travel times when volumes are higher and we need the capacity.
What do you call those again?
Pro-time lanes.
What does it stand for?
Provisional time travel lanes. Yeah, so for example, on Division, 7 to 9 a.m. westbound, that parking lane becomes an extra travel lane. And same thing in the p.m. peak, 4 to 6 p.m. eastbound, the parking lane becomes a travel lane. So all of these conditions kind of interfered with creating a vibrant and green Main Street. The report from 2006 also identified the many competing uses on Division, and as part of our transportation plan, Division is classified as a neighborhood collector street, a major transit priority street, a major emergency response route, a local service bikeway, a city walkway, and a truck access street, so many kind of conflicting uses and demands. So in 2009, after receiving federal and local funds to move forward with the transportation elements from the Division Green Street Main Street Plan, the city initiated the Division Streetscape and Street Reconstruction Project. And our focus during this phase was to develop a design that would really do three things. One, achieve the objectives and goals from this 2006 plan while also addressing the issues and constraints that it identified. And three, to attempt to balance the multimodal transportation demands on Division. And for our public outreach process, we established a 23-member citizen advisory committee comprised of representatives from local businesses and neighborhood associations, business and property owners, bicycle and pedestrian advocates, school PTA representatives, and a youth representative, as well as representatives from city bureaus, including Bureau of Planning and Sustainability and the Bureau of Environmental Services. The CAC met monthly for over a year to develop and revise the design based on community feedback. We held two public open houses for this project, one at the onset to present the goals and initial design ideas to the community, and a final open house to present the proposed design one last time for our final public review. We held a Saturday design workshop in the middle of our process, which allowed the community to review the design in detail and provide site-specific feedback. We also conducted a series of smaller business and property owner outreach meetings, and these meetings created an opportunity for these property owners and business owners to provide site-specific feedback one-on-one with staff and project designers. We also attended local fairs, community events, and neighborhood and business association meetings to inform the public about this project and receive feedback. With the help of the CAC, we established four goals for this project, the first being shared economy. Under this goal, the design would include street improvements that support both the commercial and residential uses of the street, preserve parking for business vitality, and preserve visibility and sidewalk access to businesses. Our second goal was clean and green environment. Under this goal, we'd add green street infrastructure, bioswales, stormwater planters, street trees, to manage stormwater and improve air and water quality. Our third goal was healthy community. Under this goal, we would encourage bicycling, walking, and transit use through improved facilities and support traffic speeds that are consistent with high levels of pedestrian activities. And the fourth goal is placemaking. So this goal was created to help encourage a design on Division that would provide a unique identity for the corridor through art and cohesive design elements. So to achieve these goals, we first needed to conduct a traffic analysis for the corridor. The major objectives of this analysis was to determine to what extent the ProTime lanes could be removed along Division to provide the necessary right-of-way for other streetscape improvements, such as full-time parking, curb extensions, and bioswales. For this analysis, traffic engineers analyzed current and future traffic volumes under the proposed two-lane cross-section, vehicle speeds, and turning movements and lane utilization patterns throughout the corridor. And for any changes to the street cross-section, we as a city would still be required to satisfy local and federal performance requirements for motor vehicles and transit operations to not create congestion on Division that would result in diversion onto adjacent local service streets, and to maintain adequate vehicle and truck access to local businesses. And so on to our findings and recommendations. Staff modeled current and future traffic volumes under both the existing conditions and the proposed two-lane cross-section and found that Southeast Division can adequately serve traffic with one lane in each direction except near major nodes, so being Southeast 11th, 12th, that couplet, and the Seven Corners intersection, which is Southeast 20th, Ladd, 21st, and Division. So we found that for these major nodes, we need to maintain the existing cross-section to provide adequate capacity and address the traffic demands during peak travel times, and that's for now and in the future. But outside of these intersections, traffic engineers found that we're able to remove ProTime lanes. Our field observations indicated that The outside lanes were not utilized as much as the inside lanes due to the narrow width. So we have 4 9-foot travel lanes on Division. And so as such, we're proposing to remove the pro-time lanes to provide a wider single travel lane in each direction. Doing so will allow us the opportunity to also provide either on-street parking for businesses or build out into the right-of-way and provide some of the other streetscape improvements, so curb extensions and green street amenities. We'd also like to note that the project coordinated closely with the Portland-Milwaukee light rail project and their traffic analysis. We wanted to make sure that anything we're proposing under this project works with the changes that will come on Division as part of the Portland-Milwaukee light rail project. And they've incorporated our plan into their modeling. And the results show that the light rail will not have an adverse impact on Division and that we can still move forward with our changes as planned. And so these changes are supported by the CAC, our Citizen Advisory Committee, and the majority of the community members. I would like to note that there are still minority opinions on removing these pro-time lanes, or really minority opinions on both sides. So there are individuals in the community that feel that we're not doing enough, we should do more, and remove them entirely. And then there are also individuals in the community that feel that we shouldn't remove the pro-time lanes at all. And so our plan strives to strike a balance between these two opinions and do as much as we can now and kind of make a step in the right direction in terms of calming the street and greening the street. And so after our traffic analysis, we were able to develop the streetscape plan with the community. And so in the final report, which you have in front of you, we have the full streetscape plan block by block. So I just wanted to kind of highlight some of the major plan elements. Through the corridor, we'll be constructing pedestrian safety improvements, which includes curb extensions, marked crosswalks, ADA curb ramps, and pedestrian countdown timers at all signals, adding a lot of green infrastructure, so street trees, bioswales, stormwater planners. For transit improvements, we're going to consolidate some stops and improve the stop spacing along Division. We're going to build curb extensions and crossing improvements at these bus stops and also provide some additional bus zones, full pullouts, so the bus can get out of traffic and passengers can exit safely onto the sidewalk. For bicycle amenities, we're going to be adding bike boxes at Ladd and 21st to help with circulation through the Seven Corners intersection, adding a number of bike corrals through the corridor for bike parking. And we're also going to improve travel across Division for bikes with the with the curb extensions and marked crossings that we're adding. For public art, we're working with the Regional Arts and Culture Council place public art on the street that's pedestrian scaled, that's episodic in nature, and that's going to be placed throughout the corridor, and that conveys the character of the Division Street community. For on-street parking, we're adding a number of full-time on-street parking spots in commercial zones. And then we're also looking at paving the frontage zone in commercial areas to provide as much pedestrian space as possible. And then street lighting is still to be determined. during the engineering phase, we're going to perform a corridor lighting analysis to determine if there are any additional lighting needs. And so here's an example of the streetscape design, just a couple blocks from the plan. And so the bright green dots represent new medium to large canopy trees, new marked crossings are in black, new curb extensions and corner ramp improvements are highlighted here in orange, and then a number of bioswales, which are represented here in blue. So just an example of our plan. I also wanted to touch upon some of the plan elements that we considered, but that are not part of this plan. So the first is street furniture. And due to the city's maintenance funding constraints, the plan does not include street furniture on Division. And then the other piece is the build-out of Seven Corners. So this is something that was really important to the community, but is something we're not able to incorporate into the plan at this time. And this is really due to the complexity of traffic operations at this intersection. Since we can't narrow this area to a two-lane cross-section, we really can't build out into the right-of-way and create that sense of place that the community requested. That being said, we wanted to include the rendering of what Seven Corners could look like, and that's included in the final report. And if in the future, if mode splits are high enough and auto volumes decrease enough to allow us to reduce capacity through this intersection, this may be what Seven Corners could look like in the future. And the CAC especially felt that this drawing almost serves as a call to action to the community to support alternative travel modes to allow Seven Corners to be transformed in the future
and create a sense of place at this intersection. And so while we're unable to incorporate this into our current plan, we feel that the streetscape improvements that we are proposing today help provide safer alternatives to driving and set the stage for public and private redevelopment at this intersection and throughout the corridor.
So on the issue of trash cans and benches, uh-huh. is the problem the buying of the trash cans or the emptying of the trash cans?
The emptying, so the maintenance piece. This project could fund the installation of these, but we can't maintain them. And so this could be something that happens in the future if, say, a maintenance agreement was struck with the business association. And so one of the things we heard from the community is focus on improvements that we can build now that maybe couldn't happen later. So do what we can with this capital project, and then down the road, maybe the neighborhood and the business association could add these other amenities like street furniture, like benches and trash cans.
So is there space and other designated spaces where these would go in the future?
Yeah, so typically they're placed in the furnishing zone, so that space would still exist. Yeah.
And does the plan identify where in particular they're desired?
No, it does not. Yeah, that is something we removed from the plan early on. So next steps for the project, pending adoption of the plan, we plan on proceeding with the engineering phases starting this summer, and that would last a year. We're going to continue to work with members of our CAC on any plan refinements that come up, and then continue to coordinate construction with the community and business owners and public agencies. And then from 2011 to 2013, construct the streetscape improvements, and also restore the pavement on Division from 10th to 39th. And that concludes my presentation. I know we have a number of community members here to testify, but before I turn it over to them, do you have any other questions for me?
I have one more.
I noticed that you don't have bike lanes on Division, and I understand that's because Clinton Street is the designated bike boulevard.
Correct.
So how would you mitigate for traffic moving to Clinton from Division with the loss of the extra lanes at rush hour?
It's something we talked a lot about during our community outreach process, and so we've included a diversion statement in the final report, and it states that we'll monitor traffic counts before and after on both Division and Clinton, and if we see a relationship where volumes drop on Division and they increase on Clinton, we'll look at additional mitigation for that bike boulevard, and so we'll work with our bicycle coordinator to determine what that would be, what that'll look like. We have some ideas at this point of additional passive mitigation that we can do, passive calming for
like
Clinton
what?
Street. They're kind of passive diverters where you narrow the lane as you approach the intersection, almost kind of a pinch point. Yeah.
Okay.
I think it's also important to point out on Clinton there are currently speed bumps.
And traffic circles, yes.
And traffic circles,
yeah.
Which is an impediment to people who want to divert to Clinton currently.
Correct, yeah.
I mean, this is, in some ways, by the numbers, this is... this is an experiment because this part of town is so constrained from a vehicular throughput demand point of view. So we definitely will have to actively monitor and do that in partnership with folks that do business and work there. Because you never know. I mean, the diversion might happen to Clinton. It might go some other place. We don't always know, and we're just going to have to really watch it carefully.
I would also point out that at 39th, even if you want to put up with the traffic diverters and the speed bumps, you can't continue east on Clinton. You have to
Correct.
Turn right or left. So I think already there is...
Bikes can continue through, but motor vehicles must turn.
Right. It's not necessarily an attractive cut through.
This is my route. Yeah. Could you tell?
Okay, very good.
I'm hopeful about it not going to Clinton for the reasons you state. I'm just curious where else it might go because the volumes here and the speed here is the reason we're doing this is the volume and speeds are so devastatingly high. So we'll see what happens.
So,
can I just finish my question?
Yeah, sorry.
Thanks. Can you tell me if all the loading and unloading for businesses and multifamily will be in loading zones? Because we're losing a lane, right? So how would...
We are. So that'll still occur in the parking lane that exists today. So all of the loading zones that exist on Division will remain in place. We won't build any curb extensions or swales
So are there any additional loading zones where?
We're not providing any at this point. I mean, that could be changed. We are adding full-time parking to the street. So that could be, instead of parking spaces, it could be converted to a loading zone if there's a need and the property owner wants that.
Don't we have a net loss of over 100 parking spaces, though?
I don't believe so. We're removing pro-time parking, but then adding full-time parking. So it's a little confusing when you look at the numbers and the graphic that I provided.
The way we had it calculated was that we're losing 91 provisional spaces and 24 existing spaces. So I'm concerned about the loading up. I'd like to hear that from comments from the neighborhood and businesses about that. Does the project design respond to the current uses or the current zoning? And what are we anticipating happening if this new development? Because we're not changing the zoning. Did we change the zoning earlier?
We did during the 2006 process, yeah. And so the division is now zoned for mixed-use commercial.
And so this project looked at the future development build-out?
It did, yes.
Okay.
From a traffic modeling standpoint, it looked at the future build-out for the existing where parking is and loading zones. We looked at the existing uses that are out there, are currently out there. So it's a mix of both. But from a traffic modeling standpoint, we looked at the zoning.
The loading, just to also provide for the record legislative intent, we look forward to the day when there is more demand for loading zones. And we have the, in terms of our ability to be nimble in being able to provide that based on demand, we will be.
Good.
And actually, because we have some more permanent spots in more places, we actually have more opportunities to do a better job for businesses. And in a lot of our neighborhood commercial streets, they're loading zones during a specified time based on the needs of the adjacent business. So it doesn't mean that we have to designate them like downtown where they're loading zone 24 hours a day.
Correct.
And then in terms, thank you very much. That makes me feel more comfortable. In terms of the funding, the total cost is $13 million, right?
Correct. And so we're teaming up with the Bureau of Environmental Services to also construct their Tabor to the River program improvements on Division as part of this project. So $7 million is coming from BES, and we'll be building a number of the swales that they would like to see on the street, as well as sewer pipe improvements. So that's $7 million. And then $6 million is coming from PBOT, transportation funds, for our piece of the project.
And that's including some system development charges, right?
Correct.
And we've
yes.
got some federal funding for
federal
it?
Federal fund, $2.5 million, yeah, in federal funding. And then the rest is local transportation SDCs and general transportation revenue.
Great. Thank you very much.
Yep.
So I guess to me, I see diversion traffic going not to Clinton, but either Hawthorne or Powell. The traffic that's trying to get somewhere, you know, they're not going to go Clinton if they're trying to get beyond 39th. You know,
right. Use some of the other major thoroughfares. Yeah. And we also found in our traffic analysis that about 2/3 of the traffic is local as well. So aren't using Division necessarily to get far out east or to Gresham.
Okay. Because I was just wondering about the stretch between, I guess, Seven Corners and Cesar Chavez Boulevard in terms of left turn restrictions. Was that considered at all?
We did. We considered that initially. The turning movements or the turning demand for those left movements wasn't great enough that where we, it would justify putting in those left turn pockets or restricting turns, excuse me. Yeah.
So I guess, yeah, explain that to me again.
Sorry. You're saying,
Aren't people doing left turns?
Yeah, the number's not.
Yeah, there are left turns occurring off of Division. However, there aren't a lot of them, mm-hmm. so it doesn't warrant us either precluding or we can allow them. They don't actually limit traffic as much as you.
Apply in the full build-out scenario that you modeled?
I believe so. We have the traffic mm-hmm. engineer here if we'd yep. like to ask that specific question.
Yeah.
Because I see a definitely improvement by having a bus turnout or bus turnouts.
We are still providing those.
Yeah. No, I see that as
yes. okay.
a plus. I guess I just see the potential for long lines of traffic if somebody's making a left turn during rush hour one way or the other.
I would just point out I'm sounding like a traffic engineer here, but I use these routes a lot. Hawthorne ceases at 52nd, and people who want to go further east are not going to turn left to go to Hawthorne, only to find that they're diverted at 52nd back to Powell. So I don't think that may happen. And those that would want to go to Powell